In American society, money is a taboo topic. We're taught at a young age it's improper to talk about it, but we're also bombarded with messages about the power and importance of money in our everyday lives. And by not talking about it, we miss out on the skills and lessons we need to effectively understand and financially plan. That changes today. Welcome to Money Tales. Hosted by Sandy Brager and Cami Doder, Money Tales brings more than 35 years of combined professional experience in personal finance to demystify money and demonstrate what it's like to speak openly about personal financial matters. Join us each episode as they interview modern-day movers and shakers about how money decisions intertwine with their daily lives in order to give you better insight into productive financial conversations. Subscribe today and register for our blog Fathom at esperient.com/podcasts to increase your money mojo. And now, here's Cami and Sandy.
Laura Moreno Lucas is our guest this week on Money Tales. Laura arrived in the United States from Mexico when she was 7 years old, unable to speak a word of English. With her parents tirelessly working to make ends meet and facing their own language barriers, Laura found an unexpected mentor in the form of a janitor at her elementary school. Day after day, this janitor stayed behind after school to help Laura navigate the complexities of her new language, instilling in her not only the ability to communicate, but also the courage to ask questions, a skill that would shape her future in profound ways. Fast forward to her first job in the financial sector, where Laura found herself surrounded by the dizzying flow of money that defines Wall Street. She couldn't help but wonder, where did all this money come from? How did fortunes change hands so effortlessly? Laura stuck with that curiosity as she advanced her career and ultimately headed to the venture capital world. Today, Laura is general partner at Latitude Ventures. She leverages her exceptional network and expertise to support the firm's deal flow and outreach strategy. She is also the founder and CEO of PandoCap, which provides strategic advisory and media services that help early and growth stage companies access capital markets, implement and measure environment, social, and governance strategies, and accelerate toward an initial public offering, an IPO. Prior to that, as a successful Latina entrepreneur, Laura founded and exited LaDada, one of the first fashion subscription startups to feature emerging new designers.
Here are three key money topics Laura hits on in this conversation. First, how her parents instilled in her the belief that you have to work hard to make money, and what it was like for Laura to discover that there are other ways. Second, how she has encouraged her network to be good stewards to their community as they gain financial success. And third, why it's important for startup founders to have transparent money conversations with their funders early on, especially when they realize something is wrong with their strategy or they're not achieving the impact they're hoping for. We hope you share this episode with a friend, and please subscribe to Money Tales on your favorite podcast platform. Now on to our conversation with Laura Moreno Lucas.
Welcome to the Money Tales podcast. I'm Cami Doder.
And I'm Sandy Brager. I was recently asked to lead a workshop on giving to a nonprofit board I serve on, Cami. I have such esteem and respect for my fellow board members and was delighted when they asked me to do this at an offsite retreat that we were having. I'm excited to share that the intent was to help our board members be more confident in their roles as ambassadors to the organization for development purposes. So asking for gifts, how can we get ourselves more confident as a group? It's a large group, and there's a range of experience as development folks in these types of conversations with donors. And I started the workshop with a Money Tales exercise, which worked out so nice because anytime you could get folks talking about their personal relationship with money, it opens up doors, it creates connection, it makes space for confidence, which is what this group experienced. It was really fun. From there, we went on to talk about giving and receiving generally. Then we dove into philanthropic giving and covered some of the technical sides of money there, which is great because the group was primed from their personal sharing earlier and felt comfortable talking about what they knew about charitable giving and some of the tax implications and strategies and what they didn't.
This is great. Tell us, what was the feedback from the work you did from the participants?
Everyone who spoke with me afterwards about it was very enthused. They had a chance to learn things about one another that they didn't know and connect on points that they didn't know, really around the area of mindset and how they think about money. So that was really magical. It was a lot of fun. And I was so delighted and honored to have been asked to do that.
That's really great. And it reminds me of what Afam Onyema told us when he goes out and has money conversations with his donors. He really talks about how important that relationship is. So probably telling his money story and connecting the money with their purpose as a result of developing those relationships.
It's all about purpose and values.
That's fantastic, Sandy. And now it's my pleasure to welcome our guest today, Laura Lucas. It's a pleasure to be talking with you on Money Tales.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Laura, would you introduce yourself and provide a couple pivotal moments that have taken place in your life that really impacted who you are today?
As you mentioned, my name is Laura Moreno Lucas. I'm currently a partner with Latitude Ventures, which is a $100 million venture fund that is here in the United States. And we focus on investing in early stage founders. I've been in the financial industry for a very long time, and I've had the great opportunity to also be a founder and then worked at one of the most prestigious exchanges in the world, the NASDAQ, where I led many IPOs and saw, as many people think, the top echelon of capital, seeing those IPOs go public and seeing many billionaires made. In my journey of entering the financial world and then seeing the top echelon per se, it was very eye-opening experience. In terms of my background and some of those pivotal moments that shaped me, it really started when I first came to the United States. I came as an immigrant. I'm originally from Guadalajara, Mexico, Latina. And when I landed here, I landed in a town called Vacaville, which is about an hour from San Francisco. Vacaville is actually Cowtown, and it truly is Cowtown. I remember in high school, we would actually, don't tell anybody, tip cows.
But, oh no, troublemaker.
Yeah. When I came here, I was 7 years old and I didn't know any English. My parents were working all the time. Again, they didn't speak English. And I had to learn English through a janitor at my elementary school who would stay with me after school every day and help me do my homework and get kind of an understanding and a grasp on the English language. So that was, I think, my first, when I think about a pivotal moment that shaped me, that was the first because it really helped me understand language, what was going on in the school system. And it also helped me ask questions, which I think has shaped me to be where I am today because I do ask a lot of questions. I'm not one of those people who are shy about asking stupid questions because if I didn't ask, then I wouldn't know and I wouldn't be able to communicate or do all the things that I've have till today. And then I think that one of the second most pivotal moments was when I entered the work world and I have a criminal law background is what I went to school for. I wanted to be a lawyer or FBI agent, and none of those came true. And so I ended up venturing down to San Diego where I had one of my first financial jobs where I was a operations entry person. And I was entering in all of the accounts and information for all of the money that was flowing through this financial firm. And honestly, that was my first time seeing that many zeros on statements and trying to understand, like, where is this money coming from? What is going on here in the public markets? How are people making millions of dollars, which I'd never seen in my life? And so, of course, after seeing that, I wanted to learn more and just get a good grasp of Wall Street, the financial industry, and that's what started my journey.
Wow, Laura, it's such a fun story. And when you tell it like this, it all makes sense. And there you are at Latitude Ventures. But let's reel back in time. You've come to the United States. Your parents are working all the time. You're learning English. What a gift from the janitor to spend that time. I love that. And Laura, when did money start having any sort of a meaning to you? And then what was the feeling and the meanings it represented to you at that time?
Culturally, my parents have always instilled you have to work hard to make money. And that money, there's a scarcity about it. It's always about working hard to make the next dollar. And we have to really hold on to what we have. And by holding on, meaning literally either putting it under your mattress or in a savings account, if you have that, because you never know if that money is going to be there around the corner, because there's always this mindset of scarcity. It's always about work. And I started working at a very young age because the family, we just needed money. If I wanted anything for myself, I never could expect my parents to pay for that because I just had to do it. I had to pay for what I wanted. So I started working as a waitress in high school. And as many other kids were potentially doing fun stuff and homework and things like that, I was working. In that same experience through college where I had put myself through college, I didn't go directly to a four-year. I had to work to get myself through community college. I had to work, then transfer to a four-year. So it took longer because the challenge was always, if you want these things, you have to work hard and you have to support yourself around it to make that money. That was my experience early on, that there's always this scarcity around it and you can't have an abundance. And if you want to maybe potentially have a nest egg, you just have to put it away and that's it. And that only changed for me when, as I mentioned, I started to see that there was this industry that had an abundance. To me, it was an abundance because I had never experienced seeing so much capital flow to investing. And what were they investing in? And how are you actually thinking about taking your money and put it towards something that you know potentially nothing about, and there's a risk there? And so really understanding how that played out and trying to explain that to my parents was a very interesting dynamic that they still don't buy into today, I will say.
Laura, the question asking that you mentioned earlier is really coming out in your story here, all these questions that you were asking yourself at the time. Would you say more about the mindset shift and what it was like going through that? It can be very difficult when we are instilled with these beliefs as young people from the people who care about us the most and who are doing their best to launch us into the world. It sounds like you did a full 180, and I'm curious, how did that happen and what was it like for you when it was happening?
The shift happened because I understood it and I had a baseline of education at that point around what it was and how it worked and the risks of it and maybe not so risky approaches. Those conversations, they did never even remotely happened in our household and not even with other households or other friends or other relatives. Again, it was always about you have to save, you have to work hard. And if you want an abundance, you just have to work harder. There was no one, at least in our communities, that was coming to us and saying, if you have a little bit of extra savings, here's a potential way to take that savings and maybe get some higher returns by investing it in these assets or these other things that are not traditional in just a savings account. Those conversations weren't there. Primarily, it was because of my family's lack of communication in English and not knowing where to potentially have a friendlier, trusting relationship with those ecosystems here in the US, because in our countries in Latin America, the banking system is a not trustworthy system. So you just kind of innately come into the feeling of, I can't put my money there because I don't trust that system. So that's another dynamic outside of just knowing that you have scarcity, then you have whatever savings you have, and then you're going to turn it over to the system that in other countries you don't trust. That's a very hard thing to get past. So the only way I was able to get past it was because I was able to make money for myself. Because as I mentioned, I worked, I had my own little nest egg, and then I took that and started investing it. My money, once I understood really what it meant and how there's different ways to secure capital that is not so risky and make money.
I love that you were already investing and taking measured risk. You talked about working at NASDAQ, and what an exciting time. Tell us what it was like to watch wealth being unlocked through the IPO market, and what money conversations were you aware of as this was happening?
It was the good old days, right?
Yeah.
Because I was there in 18 through 2020. So that was when the market was on fire, and a little bit afterwards too. It was seeing these companies that honestly had been at the mature state of their capital journey, because the companies that I was seeing was the Airbnbs, the Lyfts, the DoorDashes, this new innovation wave that had been created, I would say almost back in 2008, 2005, it was now that these companies had received so much capital in their life cycle that they needed to start thinking about how they were going to go public and mature and really enter the market. So an understanding of what that meant, not only for the founders, but all of the employees of the company, and educating them on what it meant. That was very interesting to me, because when you're a private company, you're basically papered that, here you go, here's some stock options, here's what you're potentially going to have at some point in the company. And it's educating not only the founders, but educating board members, educating all of the employees, and really how to make that money work if you are in need of capital early on, even ahead of an exit, how to make that money work while you're still private, what happens to you after the company goes public. You see all this excitement happening on the public markets of, wow, this company is doing fantastic, but you can't actually participate
in
it. They're locked up for 6 months to a year. So really helping everybody understand those dynamics, but also the position that they're in, where that is a life-changing event for them, with some of these companies that the founders are now millionaires, billionaires, some that they understand what happens next and how do I really put that capital to use. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was also, aside from educating them on the money part, it's how to be good stewards to the communities that they've changed, that they've influenced, and that they've now could potentially impact. There were a couple Latinos at Airbnb who had been there. I think they were like the sixth employee, and they had been there for the life of the company. When that IPO happened, I talked to them. I said, wow, this is going to be really life-changing for you. How are you going to now use that capital to come back into our communities and start to not only invest, give back, educate? So it's really helping them know that they're making a difference for not only the community that they built, but the community that they serve in all aspects, whether it's the Black and Brown community, whether it's where they were started here in San Francisco, which is where I'm at. So that was, I think, the most incredible part of the IPO is really educational.
Laura, that sounds like it was very fulfilling work. And I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself and your own relationship with money, helping all those companies and employees?
What I learned is that I could do more, that my dollar, there's a lot of things that that dollar could go towards that wasn't just about putting it on the stock market, wasn't just about saving it in a bank account. There's so many different assets and things that you can have or impact that really drive change. And so that was an eye-opening experience for me, which is part of the reason why I became an investor myself and really wanted to allow myself to educate others and also help drive that mindset into other investors that their dollar can really have a change.
You believe that money can be used to drive change, and you're on this mission to do that personally. I'm curious, when you're in these conversations about money being used to impact change, what happens? What comes to life in those conversations?
I see a lot of times where people just want to learn more. They get this light bulb that goes off in their head like, wow, I didn't know you can do that. How do you start? Where do you start? Also, the other light bulb is, do I have enough money to actually do it? I'm not rich. I don't have millions of dollars. So it's this dynamic of, do I need millions of dollars to do this? No. Thousands of dollars or even starting at a smaller amount is okay. And I think that the markets have created different ways to embrace people and really help them understand that by fractional shares and fractional investing and all of these different things that are now available to people to just try to help them understand how to invest. So I think that that's what I see shifting, is that the mindset in the past has been this closed door system, this very guarded, you need to be this incredible financial person to be able to invest. And now it's like, no, I can be an everyday person. I don't have to have millions of dollars. I can use my dollar to do good, even if it's just a small amount, and then start to build and really diversify into different things that are important to me.
It sounds like you're really opening up those doors and getting more people through them. As a person who works with early stage founders, I'm sure you're having very interesting money conversations every day. What are some of the observations and techniques that you find work really well for having productive money conversations in the work you're doing?
One of the things that I see is that it's still very hard to have those money conversations, because when you're a founder, every dollar needs to have some type of impact and return to grow your business. But you never want to let the world know that that dollar or something might not be driving the result that you want it to do to grow your business. So sometimes what I see in the dynamics of the founders is they hide that instead of being very transparent about early on, hey, I need more money, or I'm starting to see that this initial way that I put this money to work isn't working. And so how do you start to think about changing that to change where you're going with it? I don't know if it's an embarrassment or more of just worried about understanding how to put the capital to work where they've come to the table with a foundation of how they're going to put it to work and it's not working. So really coming to the table and sharing that, hey, this isn't working. We need to pivot. There's something wrong. There's a lot of risk here. And so it's really being more transparent. I think that that's something that I see that founders struggle with early on when they realize something is wrong and they wait to communicate that. And then by the time they get to the longevity of it, they're at the end point and not really allowing themselves any wiggle room. It's like a live or die situation. It's like, I'm running out of money, or now I have to make these really life-changing decisions, instead of bringing it up early on and letting us know that things aren't working, because they're so passionate about the problems and the things that they're building. So they have this, I'm going to make it work regardless.
That's the entrepreneurial mindset. Is there any fear in there also? Fear of having those money conversations that might unlock challenges that they don't want to address?
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of fears in there, like admitting that maybe the way that they approached it initially was not the right way. I think a lot of times what I see happening is they start to build and hire a bunch of people, and they're burning cash on personnel because they thought they needed all these people. And you look at it and you're like, you don't need all these people. And that's just people's lives. It's a very hard position to be in, where you're building something and you realize, wow, this is not going to be sustainable. And how do I adjust from here? And so that's tough.
And as the venture capitalist, how are you encouraging the portfolio company leaders to open up and be more transparent?
I think it's a couple of different ways. I think the most important thing about an investor is obviously not only being a good steward of capital for our investors, but also really feeling like you're a trusted person. I think trust goes such a long way, because money is such a sensitive, and you really have to have trust to have those conversations and not be judged and not really come from a helpful, mindful place. Like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's move forward. Being that trusted person that you can help address and then figure things out with them, I think is a really important thing to have. I do that, and I try to do that with everybody, to have a really open communication line around anytime. My schedule is bananas. Every day my husband's all, I don't know why you pack your schedule so much, but I want to feel like I'm accessible, and I want to feel like I can have these conversations and people can reach out to me.
Laura, you're acting as the janitor for all these people and having these conversations. And it's really powerful, because something we've talked a lot about on Money Tales with our guests is when we are holding this inside of these fears, they manifest into even bigger problems. But as people do talk and have a trusted person to have these conversations, breakthroughs happen. And good for you. Would you share a little bit more about having financial conversations today with your parents, who come from such different experiences, and then seeing they must be so proud of you? But tell us a little bit more about how those conversations go.
That last comment almost got me on connecting the janitor with the accessibility, because I did feel like he
changed your world.
Yeah, he changed my world. And I never got to go back to thank him. And my mom recently told me that he passed. And I was like, wow, I hope he knows what an impact he had for me. Going back to my parents, it's wild, because I still have these conversations today with them where they're both retired. They're comfortable. They don't have any debt. They have a little nest egg. But every day, they talk about how things are so expensive, how much money things cost, how they don't want to spend here, they don't want to spend there. And they could literally take a cruise or do something fun, but they're worried about spending. I try to tell them, guys, you're okay. We're here. I have a sister. You've raised two incredible women that are hardworking, and we're fine. You don't need to worry about it. You have grandkids now. You like can enjoy your life. My husband and I recently finished a home out in wine country. It was a long, long journey. But every second of doing that process, I was so excited for my parents to come and see what we had built. But to them, it was like, oh my God, what are you going to do? How much money are you guys spending?
The worry was still there.
How are you going to pay for this after you're done building? How is this going to work? It's that, again, scarcity of how's your job going? How are you guys? And that continued conversation, I don't know if it'll change, but I think that they now have settled into the fact that we're okay. We're all okay. We're all going to be okay. But I don't know if they've changed in terms of how they think about the relationship with money. I think it's still very much embedded in them. And again, my parents are the only ones here in the US. Our entire family is still in Latin America. When you have conversations with our relatives, it's the same thing. It's that same scarcity mindset and work and work and work.
Laura, what an incredible story so far in your life. Thank you for sharing it with us. Tell us what your next money conversation is going to be and who's it going to be with.
My next money conversation is going to be focused more with continuing to drive equality with pay with women. Earlier this year, I went to Davos and sat in many houses and conversations with how even at the highest level, women are still not being paid equally across the board, regardless if you're CEO, if you're a board member, if you're a partner, every level, it's just still continues to proliferate. So I am actively working with many different groups of women and helping and educating and still fighting for that equality that we deserve across the board. So those are my money conversations with my women's groups, with my partners, with everybody that is interested in hearing. And I have an 8-year-old little girl, and I hope that by the time she enters the work world, that she doesn't have to have these conversations.
Laura, thank you for having those and being a leader in that space. We agree with you. Let's keep working on this. It's an important goal for all of us. Thank you. Would you share with our listeners, where is the best place for them to reach you?
Yeah, you can reach me on LinkedIn at Laura E. Moreno is my LinkedIn. Happy to always connect with folks through that channel. Or you can also reach me on my email. Personal email is laura@lucas.me. Or my work email is laura@latitudeventures.com.
Laura, thank you for sharing your stories. I'm tearing up myself when I think about the role that you're playing as the janitor and how we all impact people in ways that are super special. And if we can be mindful about that, it's really powerful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kemi and Sandy, for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Money Tales podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone you think would benefit from listening. And leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. Your ratings and reviews help more people find our podcast. If you're inspired to gain clarity and peace of mind about financial matters, don't hesitate to reach out to our team at Asperient. Go to asperient.com/start-a-dialogue. Or you can email Sandy and me at podcasts@asperient.com. See you next time.